This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. 7:44 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani on The Morning Run. Coming up on the grill, we have James Lin, Head of Products for Southeast Asia for Visa. And Julian Ng will be discussing credit cards and debit cards and all other cards, plastic cards, as well as consumer spending, because Visa is very well positioned to have a bird's eye view of consumer sentiment.
Yeah, Visa and MasterCard, for that matter, forms the two biggest payment houses in the world. A lot of other companies in payment housing has dropped out eventually. This includes Diners Club, if you remember, and others. Yeah. But Visa has stood through time and actually capitalized on that market. So Julian will be asking about consumer spending, you're right. And this is important because consumer analytics is going to be a big thing for the future.
What they're buying?
Yeah, right? When they're buying, how much they're buying, who they're buying with, and who they're buying for. So these are the questions.
How often are they buying?
So these questions can be answered by Visa. Now the question of privacy is also there. Are we giving too much information to these corporations? So that's going to be the balance as well.
Fantastic. James Lin, Head of Products for Southeast Asia for Visa, on the Breakfast Grill today. But in other news, the ringgit dropped the most in 2 months after 1MDB confirmed that it is in fact in default after missing an interest payment on bonds.
Yeah, so the background to this is that 1MDB is withholding the $50 million payment on their $1.75 billion denominated sukuk following the dispute with IPIC, the International Petroleum Investment Corporation, Abu Dhabi's sovereign wealth fund subsidiary. And this has reflected in investor sentiment weakening. In fact, the ringgit movement within the past week showed a decline from rising of a high of 3.8 or 3.85. They're now dropping to about 3.95. In fact, it hit 3.96 late last week. Yesterday. So I guess investor sentiment is really shaking following this scandal.
Yeah, not just the ringgit, right? CDS as well. CDS has jumped. 5-year credit default swaps climbed 4 basis points, according to prices from Nomura Holdings. I think that leaves the measure set for the highest close since March 8th. We also are looking out for what ratings agencies are saying about this.
Yeah, so Standard & Poor's said in an email statement that it doesn't see any impact on Malaysia's A solid A minus rating, its fourth lowest investment grade. Anything lower than this, we're down to speculation rating, and that would be extremely bad for Malaysia. There are other comments from other rating agencies, but it wasn't as recent as Standard & Poor's. September 2015, Fitch Ratings have said that issues surrounding 1MDB has affected the sentiment of local investors, but not that of foreign investors. Now, this makes sense because ringgit is still cheap then. It was actually 4.4, 4.3 to the US dollar. So it makes sense for foreign investors to jump in if they are able to stomach that premium risk or the risk premium that Malaysia carries. And 4.3 was still a cheap buy to buy investments in Malaysia, particularly on government papers like the government sukuk. But because the ringgit is strengthening to 3.8, in recent days, that may prove to be another point of contention because the risk premiums are still there. The political risk may have been abated, but the risk of 1MDB, and because of the fact that the government is co-guaranteeing these papers, means that there is a significant economic risk premium that they have to buy in. So this statement might change, and it'll be nice if Fitch provides an update on their review.
7:48 right now. The other big story of the day, of course, the focus really is on specs and special purpose acquisition companies, and this is because Sona Petroleum, their shareholders have voted against the purchase of its qualifying asset, and Click Energy, they are right on the heels trying to liquidate themselves. You've got trying to buy an asset in Kazakhstan as well, right?
Yeah, so...
Excuse me, that's Click Energy that's liquidating themselves. Reach Energy buying an asset in Kazakhstan.
Yeah, Click Energy wants to buy Click as well wants to buy an asset in Kazakhstan, though they want to liquidate themselves. So that's the bizarre part, right? They plan to liquidate themselves, but they want to pursue a qualifying asset in Kazakhstan. That's Click. So Sona yesterday had their EGM rejecting their qualifying acquisition, or QA, and the rate of rejection was higher than expected. Now, when we had Sona Petroleum's head of business development, Datuk Soh Choo Boon, here, he said that he was only expecting, you know, about 10 to 20% kind of rejection. But following yesterday's EGM, only 22% voted yes. That means 77 to 78% voted no to the acquisition. So this negates the speculation that only a few or only some of the investors are arbitraging their position. Now, we have this big problem of yield investors. Well, not so much of a big problem to you and me, but for SPACs, they have this investor group that call themselves the yield investor, where it's basically zero risk to make money there. And this is when the rate of rejection being so high means that it's not just the yield investors voting no, it's actually the mom and pop and retail investors voting no as well. So is the qualifying acquisition truly a poor acquisition? That is the question.
Yeah, and I guess now, I mean, now that this has happened, what is next, right, for Sona? I think, and that's the question also being asked of other oil and gas specs. With Reach Energy, they say that they're buying a good asset in Kazakhstan. They're asking their investors to see the long-term value of the asset. But whether that remains the case, whether they will not follow the same footsteps of Sona, I don't know.
Yeah, so Reach Energy is on the brink of submitting their qualifying asset acquisition in Kazakhstan to the Securities Commission this week. So Reach Energy CEO is actually appealing to the retail investors to counteract the yield investors. He has said that we have obtained good QA for investors, and basically repeating what he has said on our grill last month. And this is the CEO of Reach Energy, Irania Shahul Hamid Muhammad Ismail.
Without being specific, I can say that, you know, no investor is blind to benefits, even though you can have investors with arbitrage in mind and so on. But when they see the value of what you're presenting it to them, they could go the other way, you know, because I believe a lot of them have a mixed kind of portfolio, some so-called yield focused and the others more on the stock value kind of focus.
That was the CEO of Reach Energy, Shahrul Hamid Muhammad Ismail, on The Breakfast Grill. And whether or not investors will be convinced, that is entirely up to them. All the management can do of these specs is try and convince investors that they do have a solid qualifying assets in their hands.
So we have the three usual suspects as the common trustees and nominees between these three specs, Reach Energy, Sona and Click. And the three trustees are Credit Suisse, Pacific Alliance and MKW Jaya Sendirian Berhad. Now, based on our information and intelligence, these trustees have come up as nominees for the true yield investors or the true arbitrage investors. So the arbitrage positions, the arbitrage investors use these trustee companies, particularly Credit Suisse, Pacific Alliance, and MKW Jaya Sdn Bhd, to buy shares inside Reach Energy. And the shares that they buy is largely significant. For instance, Sona, between Credit Suisse and Pacific Alliance, they own about a quarter of Sona. Click Energy, they own about, you know, 15% of Click Energy. And Reach, they own about 10%. So it's a sizable position to be in. And you know, this is a really big thing for SPACs. If the Securities Commission want to protect investor protection in SPACs, they also have to understand the plight of this SPACs. It's not that easy getting a vote of yes at their EGM for the QA to be passed.
I wonder whether this would deter other new SPACs from coming up, right? Especially in the oil and gas sector, it seems to be a tough time for them. 7:53 right now. Tenaga Nasional, their unit, TNB Fuel Services, has signed five contracts at $537 million, and this is for shipping coal from Indonesia to Malaysia.
Yeah, so this is interesting because the background to this is that this is being signed between TNB Fuel Services Sdn Bhd, which is a 100% subsidiary of Tenaga Nasional, with four main companies, including PNSL Bhd, Malaysian Bulk Carriers Bhd, Duta Marine Sdn Bhd, and Prima Shipping Sdn Bhd. And this is basically to import coal coming in from Indonesia. And as we know, Indonesia is one of the top coal producers producers in the world. They are ranked fifth in terms of the coal production. They're nowhere near China or the US or India, but it's good enough to note that they are very close to Australia in terms of the total share production of coal. Now, who would have expected Indonesia and Australia to produce the same amount of coal over the years? So for them to import coal means that TNB is trying to shore up position on securing energy supply.
Yeah, well, I think it also, you have to look at the energy mix of what's being used for fuel to create electricity. That's also going to be a consideration for how much coal is being used in the future.
Yeah, in Malaysia, natural gas and oil is mainly the two primary energy supply for Malaysia. Renewables is extremely small. In fact, renewables form just less than 1% of the primary energy supply of Malaysia. Hydro, the fact that we have to destroy the environment to make these hydro dams, produce just 3%. So coal does contribute a sizable amount in relation to oil and natural gas, but it's still not enough. But I guess this puts into perspective what the 1MDB projects are doing, because the bond that is defaulted is called the Langat bond, and they are in the natural gas sector. So it's really important for us to have that kind of a plant, but how is it that Tenaga can be efficient in trying to secure energy supplies, but 1MDB is not efficient in trying to secure the energy supply? So that is the dichotomy that we're trying to draw here.
Well, let's move over to the US very quickly, because Apple has just announced its results, which saw an end to 13 years of continuous quarterly growth. Apparently weighing on their results were the fact that iPhone sales fell, especially in China.
Yeah, so this is the 13th, they had a 13 quarter growth, and this is the first time that they took a dip. And this is significant because it reflects Apple's weak demand inside the domestic of market of US. Now, Apple is trying to improve on their market share globally, and the two big markets that they haven't penetrated yet is in China and India, and that's why they are introducing products that have a lower price point. They may have to strip down the features of these products, but they want to capture that market very sizably, and this includes the rollout of the product called the iPhone SE. But the iPhone SE, I don't know whether, you know, folks in India and China are appealed to that whole branding of Apple.
Well, I think there's also concern that whether there's a saturation in the number of iPhone users, whether, you know, you can still get new, fresh users, organic users. However, in China, that could be the case. Tim Cook said that the company is really committed to growing its presence in China. Whether that's a smart thing to do, given the slowdown there in the economy, is, you know, still in question.
No, the question also is, have they saturated their penetration globally and domestically? Now, you know, I may not have the numbers on my fingertips, but my suspicion is they have, saturated the market. So the only new frontiers would be China and India. So it makes sense for Tim Cook to go double down on China on that matter. But is Apple in trouble? I don't think so, because Apple does have a massive cash pile. Because as of the second quarter, numbers this morning that they introduced, they have about $233 billion. This is cash pile.
Yeah.
And that's, well, put it this way, they're far richer than Malaysia in that sense. For them to have they're sitting on $233 billion, it doesn't mean that they're in trouble. Yes,
yeah.
They got to get
the quarterly, it was an end to continuous quarterly growth, but seriously, how much money are we talking about in terms of what Apple has, right? It's an economy of a small country.
Our big country.
Our big country. 7:58 right now. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Julian Ng will be speaking to the Visa head of Southeast Asia product sales for Visa, Jason Lim. So that's on the Breakfast Grill after the 8 o'clock news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.